Welcome to Tonic Boom, a specialist capital markets podcast series brought to you by Tonic, the expertise-led consultancy dedicated to giving firms more. Join our host, our resident Tonic ninjas, and industry experts as we drop the mic on the hot market topics across high-profile domains such as margin, post-trade, treasury, risk, digital, legal, sustainability, and more. More expertise, more trust, more achieved. Ready for your dose of Tonic?
Hello, hello, and welcome to Tonic Boom. For those tuning in for the first time, Boom is Tonic's expertise-led podcast series covering the hottest topics across capital markets and beyond. I'm Chris Watts, Tonic's CEO and co-founder, and as of recently, our podcast host. As for today's podcast, this is the second in our US Treasury clearing series, the Reg Initiative driving major industry transformation over the next couple of years. Last time around, you would have heard us hold our Treasury clearing Kickstarter, which gave an introduction to the topic across areas such as rule scope, compliance timeframes, a history of repo clearing given by Professor Travis Keltner, by which he'll forever be known on Tonic Boom, at least based on his awesome nautical analogy. Do listen in if you haven't caught it yet. We also talked about an introduction to FICC GSD service model and some of the key players involved. Today, as promised, we're going to move things forward onto the various access models available to in-scope firms. Of course, this is a foundational component of the Treasury clearing operating model. Once more, we've got a great bunch of ninjas with us, or industry experts in normal speak. We're welcoming back our friends from State Street in the shape of Jeff Soule and Jordan Cobb. And we also have Phil Cook, again, our resident Tonic Ninja. Guys, do you mind giving us some brief intros? Phil, maybe we start with you.
Hi, my name is Phil Cook. I'm a director and head of post-trade at Tonic Consultancy, and I've been in capital markets for about 20 years.
Thank you, Phil. And Jeff?
Hey, Jeff Soule. I lead product development for the Americas for State Street's repo, agency lending, and prime services businesses.
Thank you, Jeff. And Jordan?
Yeah, I'm Jordan Cobb. I'm a product manager supporting all things repo through clearing in our peer-to-peer repo product at State Street.
Thank you, chaps. Now, before we go too far, we do have the chance to get to know one of our guests a little better. We're going to do this via our Two Truths, One Lie challenge, which is fast becoming a staple of Tonic Boom. Jordan, as the new kid on the block, we're going to politely ask you to step forwards here. No pressure at all, but Jeff did a really good job last time around. Have you guys compared notes, by the way? Have you given Jordan any advice or tips, Jeff?
The only advice I've given Jordan is that the number of people that have come out of the woodwork commenting on my distaste of cheese has been alarming. I wasn't expecting the overwhelming outpouring of questioning about that. So I would caution Jordan about exactly he's going to go forward with here, but I highly anticipate it.
Very good. Okay, let's do it. Jordan, feel free to take the mic, sir.
Absolutely. All right. So for my first statement here, I have my open water scuba certification. Second one is, in college, I won a school-wide karaoke contest. And my third statement is, in high school, I mined Bitcoin for a month when it was priced at just $10 a coin.
Okay. So we're gonna do the playback again. So that was a scuba certification. That was winning a karaoke contest. Was it a high school?
College, school-wide, yeah.
A college, okay. And then you were ahead of the curve on Bitcoin with an impressive buy rate. What do you reckon, guys?
I think the karaoke's a lie.
I'm going to go with Bitcoin simply because if Jordan was being truthful about this, there's a fair probability he wouldn't be working at State Street right now.
That was an incredible rate, wasn't it? What was the rate again, Jordan?
$10 a coin.
Oh my gosh.
This was like late 2010.
Okay. And can we, are we allowed to ask you to sing? I think I'm probably pushing my luck. I think that's bending the rules. So it sounds like Jeff's going for Bitcoin. Phil, you're going for karaoke. I'm going to keep to the Tonic line here. I'm going to go karaoke too. Jordan, what was the lie?
The lie was karaoke. I never have been a singer and never participated in any sort of karaoke contests, but good job on the Tonic front there.
Very good. That was tricky. Well done, sir. And not that we're counting, but I think that's Tonic 2, State Street nil now.
I think you're right.
Awesome. Right. Thank you, chaps. On to our main segment. So we're going to focus on access models for treasury clearing. Choosing the right access model is obviously a critical early strategy decision for all firms in their treasury clearing journey. Before we let the guys loose, just a reminder that we're going to be focusing predominantly on repo clearing as the traded product with the greatest buy-side impact and therefore the most relevant to the wider market transformation that's playing out. You might also hear us refer to FIC as clearing agent. Bearing in mind, of course, FIC is the only live repo clearing agent. We know others are coming in the shape of CME and ICE, but as of today, it's probably best we focus on what we know well. Right, before we go too big on access models, something that I think any listeners new to treasury clearing may need some context on is how membership to FIC works and the different options available. Who wants to get us started there?
I can start, Chris. So there's three key FIC GSD membership types that we want to talk about today. So there's a netting membership, a sponsoring membership, and also a sponsored membership. So netting members are direct members of FIC GSD. They have to meet capital or net worth requirements depending on the type of organization. These firms have a financial responsibility to FIC, including the clearing fund and margin obligations, and they must establish an operational connectivity to FIC. Most netting members today are dealers, banks, and there are some buy-side firms, mainly with securities or brokerage arms, that are netting members as well. We also have sponsoring members. So State Street is a sponsoring member. All sponsoring members are netting members, so the same requirements persist. In addition, sponsoring members must have sponsoring member agreement with FIC GSD. They must have the ability to meet clearing fund and margin obligations for both house and client trades. And just to note, there are 35 total sponsoring members in the markets today. This list is comprised of big banks and dealers. The last membership type is the sponsored member. So the sponsored member, they require a sponsoring member in order to get the access. So this is an indirect and limited membership to FIC GSD. They must have a documented relationship with their sponsoring member. The sponsoring member will provide the sponsored member agreement to FIC GSD. And these sponsored member firms are generally on the buy side.
Yeah. And so I think, Phil, to add into that, really the ubiquitous model in the buy side repo space has been the sponsored model. Like you mentioned, State Street is a sponsoring member. We sponsor firms as sponsored members into FIC. And so there's a reason why generally buy side firms do not themselves become netting members. And that's really because of, like you mentioned, it's very costly. It's arduous. It's not usually a great fit. It's simpler and easier to go through a sponsoring member, such as State Street and the other 35 plus sponsoring firms you mentioned. So generally, membership requirements for a firm who is looking to become a sponsored member are significantly lighter. So obviously, it's forming a relationship with a sponsoring member. However, there are a few requirements for membership. So the first one is that generally, firms need to have a valid LEI. So that's not usually a problem. Firms used to need to be QIBs, qualified institutional buyers. That simply means that the entity manages at least 100 million in securities. That's actually going to be going away as part of the clearing mandate. And the last one is for US entities, FATCA compliance. So really, a firm looking to join that sponsored model is signing a sponsored member agreement. It's a tri-party agreement between themselves, FIC, and the sponsoring member that simply lays out that the sponsored member is beholden to certain aspects of the FIC rulebook in a limited context.
So thank you, guys. I guess the obvious follow-up question there is, what specifically are the access model options available to firms in scope for repo clearing?
So I can get that started. So, you know, as a buy-side firm is looking to, you know, get access to clearing, you know, as we mentioned, there's the netting membership. So that's the direct access. The client can go direct. As Jeff pointed out, it's costly. You really need to be a large repo consumer and have the book to justify, even if you do qualify, even just justifying that initiative is a big deal. One of the benefits of that is that you do get full access to trading partners. And I don't know if it's a pro or not, but you have full ownership of your, you know, clearing responsibilities and workflows. The con, as we discussed, is the costs, and it's just not practical for many of the firms. And then Jeff had discussed the sponsored member model. I think it's important when we talk about this model So this is the sponsoring member with the sponsored member. It's important to discuss done with trading. So almost all of the sponsored repo today is done with. And this means that the sponsoring member is making the market for the sponsored member. In other words, they take on all the deal flow. Once the trade is done, the sponsoring member takes care of the clearing, settlement, clearing fund, and margin obligations for the sponsored member. A key benefit here is it's easy for the client and provider. You know who you're trading with, it's done with. Once that trade gets to the sponsoring member, the client or the buy side firm really doesn't have a lot of work or anything. They don't have to do anything additional for central clearing. I think one of the cons with this model is as this becomes mandatory, clients will probably want to have multiple trading partners. So in this done with model, when you're trading with your sponsor, you're probably going to want to have multiple trading partners, which would mean you would set up with multiple sponsors. So this creates more onboarding and just additional parties in the workflow for central clearing.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in. I mean, we already are seeing a lot of, diversification from buy-side firms and who they're interacting with for their sponsors. So some of it is just kind of a, exposure. The trades do get cleared to FIC, but there is some onus to the, smooth operating on a day-to-day basis with their respective sponsors. So, a lot of these large money funds in particular really like to invest their cash across multiple sponsors in space today. So as this becomes mandatory, we're only going to see that really accelerate and pick up speed there.
Very good.
I also wanted to touch on the agent clearing model. So the agent clearing model, it wasn't specifically addressed in the membership types because it's not a new membership type or a different membership type. Agent clearing members are netting members just like sponsoring members, but it's a, I'll air quote, newer model that's been introduced by FIC recently, which was spun out of the correspondent clearing or prime broker model. So the agent clearing access model specifically addresses done away trading. So this is when a client would trade with another party in the market, another FIC GSD member, and then gives up the trade to the agent clearing provider. So an example of this is if firm A does a trade with Goldman Sachs, and then the firm A gives that trade up to State Street, and then State Street then becomes responsible for all the central clearing and clearing fund and margin obligations. The clear benefit for the buy side here is that they're open up to multiple trading partners and can get price discovery and liquidity from multiple providers and then run through just one provider for central clearing. Some of the challenges that providers may see is that they have to create new workflows and potentially build new support models for the done-away trades. The done-away model may very well start to look and feel like a clear derivatives or FCM model. The agent clearing member would take in all the trades, run the lifecycle processes, deliver statements, and possibly collect margin daily, which would be new for the market. We'll see how it unfolds over the coming months and what firms start to offer in this done-away space.
Jeff, Jordan, anything you want to add specifically on the agent clearing side?
It creates a really interesting opportunity, as Phil was talking about, with kind of the broader access to the market for buy-side firms through a centralized clear instead of having to onboard. It's not the most onerous onboarding process, as mentioned previously, establishing that sponsoring relationship, but it does take work and legal resources. So this is a streamlining of that, opening up the marketplace. And, I think the big question is, what is going to be some of the infrastructure and workflow that's going to need to kind of, be built up to really support this at scale? So right now, if you're executing bilaterally and that sponsoring firm is handling your clearing as well, it's pretty seamless to kind of your non-cleared repo that you're doing today. But as soon as you need to kind of introduce this kind of third party into the mix of your, executing counterparty and now your agent clear who you would be giving the trade up to, there's, not that existing kind of infrastructure workflow that exists broadly. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot to come from, the Tradeweb's, GLMX's of the world, but something that's not really well adopted. So we're kind of interested in seeing how this all kind of shapes and plays out.
And I think thematically, the market is moving towards a more flexible model, right? So in the past, you really had the sponsored model, trade with your sponsor. Now there's going to be a lot more optionality as far as, do buy-side firms want to engage in this agent clearing model? Do they want to engage in the sponsored model? Do they want to trade with? Do they want to trade away? Now there are going to be options around, can buy-side firms contribute to margin on their own? Or is there the possibility for them to net futures margin? So I think this is a good story for the buy-side in that it'll force sponsors or sponsoring firms or firms that would offer the agency clearing model to really improve and update their offerings. And that's a good thing for the market.
Completely agree. Yeah, I can see how it will force other firms to up their game along the way. All right, so some strong early insights there. I guess, Jeff, you made the point earlier that there's an expectation that most buy-side firms are likely in the short term to choose the sponsor model based on some of the immaturity concerns in that agency model that we've just discussed. You guys are obviously part of a leading sponsor member service at State Street. Could you share some more to our listeners around how that model actually works in practice?
The sponsored model was created in 2005. Slight pat on the back. State Street was closely involved with FIC in creating that model. It was really just a solution for 2A7 money fund cash. And the model stayed that way really from 2005 until 2017. So don't forget, between 2009 and 2016, we're talking about a low interest rate environment, low zero interest rate environment. And that really historically always kind of tamps down buy-side demand for cash investment and collateral financing when markets are flushed with liquidity and rates are low. So in 2017, as rates started to rebound, FICC updated its rule book to be more inclusive as to the types of entities that can participate in the sponsored model. So whereas in the past, it was just the US 2A7s, then FIC expanded it to QIBs, like I mentioned earlier. So this allowed firms not only to act as cash providers, but also cash borrowers. And then it also allowed for firms of non-US domicile to start participating in the program. And so what's happened is really ever since 2017, FIC has continuously built out the jurisdictions that are able to participate in the sponsored model. Really, I think by early 2020, volume growth in the sponsored space started to be fully diversified away from just the 2A7 funds. So we're at this point, we're seeing UCITS funds, other foreign types of investment funds. We're seeing alt funds, pensions, corporates, small banking institutions. So a really diverse market. I think the most important evidence of this is, right, like, you know, the COVID market in March of 2020 and the zero interest rate environment that followed, we didn't see the sponsored market collapse. You know, we saw volumes consistently hang in, supported by some of those other types of firms I mentioned, the non-US 2A7 firms. The 2A7s could get liquidity from the Fed's RRP program, so they generally came out of the market. But without them, the sponsor product really continued, the value proposition continued. So I think where we are today is a fully mature market. We're talking over $1 trillion of total traded volume, which has continued to grow. Last year at this time, it was around $600 to $700 billion. So again, continued growth even over the last year. Like Phil mentioned earlier, 35 plus sponsors, 47 jurisdictions of eligible approved jurisdictions, including all 27 EU countries. Excellent liquidity, super competitive rates, given the influx of sponsors, tight spreads. So really a mature market globally, I think, setting the stage for what a cleared repo market would look like.
Jeff, thank you, sir. And look, I guess part of my role here is to sort of act as the European guy amongst my American cousins. I guess some of those terms, Jeff, the folk over here might be a bit less familiar with. So the 2A7s and the QIBs, do you maybe just want to bring those to life for our less well-informed European partner?
I apologize. I think we all live in a world of acronyms. So 2A7 funds are just US 40 Act investment funds. So think the major money fund complexes, and then a QIB, a qualified institutional buyer. So again, this has roots in US law, but really a QIB is just any firm that manages over $100 million of securities. It's intended to be sophisticated investment firms as opposed to individual persons or small time players. So some degree of sophistication.
Lovely. Thank you. And Jordan, did you want to have a go at taking it down one level in terms of maybe the operating model on the sponsored member side?
Yeah. Thanks for that history lesson, Jeff. There's a lot to, you know, I think build some context there, I think, for folks. So to kind of bring it into the real life application. So FIC has, you know, kind of two primary indirect offering models for buy side firms. So there's this DVP model, which is the primary model that was launched with State Street being that initial sponsor there. And then there's also the sponsored GC, general collateral model as well. And that leverages a tri-party settlement process. And right now, BONY, Bank of New York Mellon, is the only tri-party agent that supports that. So I'll just kind of quickly run through kind of the two trading life cycles to kind of, you know, build on the themes we talked about today. So in the DVP model, this is where, as Phil kind of mentioned, right, you have this, you know, primarily done with trading. So once that trade is executed, and most of this is done on a same day basis, although with some of the increased volatility, we are seeing some more forward starting trades out for kind of extended periods. But typically, most of the volume is same day. So when that happens, you're going to be settling with your sponsor directly, you know, via cash or a DVP settlement for providing collateral. And the sponsor will be responsible for messaging their own proprietary trade and the sponsored client's trade to the clearing agent, FIC in this case. And then FIC will be matching these messages up and novating and taking over as the counterparty for these transactions. And once that happens, it goes into FIC's overnight netting process. So what FIC does is they look at all of the outstanding transactions and obligations from all of the members and sponsored members, and they will net the obligations. This minimizes the operational movements. So if you have a security, if you're kind of rolling a trade, if you will, right, FIC is going to look at that and not require the kind of gross DVP settlement of a CUSIP or ISIN for our international friends. And they will instead kind of look at the par quantity and then do just a calculation on the cash difference. And it really cuts down on the operational movements. And when we're talking about, you know, a model that's going to, you know, potentially support trillions on a daily basis, this is going to be, you know, a large component in, you know, smoothing out those day-to-day operations. For the sponsored GC model, things behave a little bit differently since it's being supported through Tri-Party. So typically how this works is they will join with a sponsor and have a kind of sub-account with that sponsor at Bank of New York Mellon, where they'll wire their cash into. And once that happens, the sponsor will be responsible for allocating sufficient collateral to that sponsor and client underneath. And the good thing about this model is it allows for broader asset classes. So you can collateralize these trades with agency mortgage backs, in addition to US Treasuries and agency debentures, which are also eligible in the FIC DVP model. So it's a little bit easier with a little bit broader of an access to different asset classes. But this is a bit newer. I believe it launched in 2021. And then maybe, Jeff, I know you keep a pulse on these things. You can talk a little bit about, you know, kind of the volumes we see there today.
Yeah, absolutely. So just for context, the sponsored program that we've been referencing most generally here has been the delivery versus payment or DVP program. The overall sponsored volumes in the DVP program as of yesterday, and this data is available on FIC's very helpful website, was over $1.2 trillion versus for the sponsored GC tri-party model that Jordan just introduced, about a trillion, a cool trillion less, about $200 billion. And just to reinforce that point, so it really is a model that is sought after by the money fund community. You know, traditionally, the money fund community likes trading through a tri-party agent, streamlined settlement process. You know, tri-party agent provides all sorts of details around collateral allocation and reporting. So I think, again, in agreement with Jordan, it's more of a niche specific use case model, no doubt one that has seen nice uptake and growth, but the DVP model is probably the de facto landing spot for firms looking to engage in the sponsor model going forward. So maybe just to pivot it on that note about firms starting to think about engaging, I'll pass it to Phil, and we can just start a quick conversation around what firms should think about and broadly how to start approaching what could otherwise be a pretty daunting process.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, first thing to do is kickstart the education, you know, engage with your service providers, you know, big custodians, banks are sponsoring members and service providers. There's a lot of industry forums, also industry specialists like ourselves that you can reach out to. You know, if you are going to be affected, I need to mobilize the USTC program. We recommend a formal impact assessment. We call this a health check at Tonic. This helps define scope, assess current state, can help determine your market access model, cost benefit analysis, and provide recommendations to move forward. So I think, you know, connecting with the industry, connecting with your current providers, and then, you know, partnering with someone if you have a decent amount of work in front of you is a good way to go.
Makes sense, Phil. Thank you. And yeah, look, I wouldn't be doing my other job if I didn't reinforce those same thoughts. A lot of education in the early stages of any major transformation program, such as treasury clearing, particularly for those firms brand new to repo clearing. Tonic is in a great position to help support those firms, especially through those early stages, to mobilize and start accelerating the right strategy and solution decisions. Right, I think we're probably coming towards the end of today's podcast. Thank you guys for all your time and your insightful thoughts again. Much appreciated. Plenty covered today, from the FIT membership options, the different access models, a zoom in on that sponsor model from Jordan, and then some great history and context provided by Jeff. Of course, some of the practicalities of getting started. Do tune in for the next Tonic Boom episodes on treasury clearing. We're going to keep the content pretty fluid, but we are likely to cover, amongst other things, the likes of collateral impacts, optimal US Treasury operating models, and how to mobilize a treasury program front to back, which is no mean feat. Also, do keep an eye out for the wider set of Tonic Boom podcasts, covering the hottest trends and focus areas across collateral, post-trade, risk, treasury, digital, legal, and more. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Tonic Boom. Don't forget to like and subscribe to stay up to date on the latest developments and industry opinion across capital markets. Visit thetonicconsultancy.com to see more of our expertise-led insights and end-to-end solutions. Tonic. More expertise, more trust, more achieved.